I would say the first hack is one that we've touched on in the previous conversation, and that is know your competition. This is whether you are a personal brand, whether you're a small, medium-sized business. I do a lot of work now after working with the big Fortune 100. Now in my own consultancy, I work with solopreneurs, entrepreneurs, startups, and small to medium-sized businesses because I've done the big company thing and now I like working with smaller companies because you can see the work that you do come to life and affect the business a lot faster.
Amen.
And one of the things that I'm always amazed by when I do branding work is that I'll ask the client, okay, so who are your top three competitors? And a lot of times they're able to name maybe one. And I'll say, this is not good. You really have to understand that you are operating in an ocean, in a sea of other competitors, and you have to be very intentional about deciding where you are playing in that sea.
Thank you for tuning in to Hacks and Hobbies with your host, Junaid. We're visited by our amazing guests coming from all walks of life. Want to learn their story, their struggles, and their journey on how they got to where they are today. So stick around.
In this episode, we explore the extraordinary career journey of Philip Van Dusen, a creative professional with a diverse background in design, teaching, and entrepreneurship. From starting out as a painter to overseeing global design at PepsiCo, Philip shares his insight and wisdom about embracing creativity, making strategic career shifts, and thriving in the ever-evolving creative industry. Whether you're an aspiring artist, designer, or entrepreneur, Philip's story is sure to inspire and motivate you on your creative journey.
Philip, I'm so excited to have you here today.
Junaid, thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. We were having some conversation over at the pro community on SBI, and I was looking for specific people in the space, in the industry, and you're like, or maybe it was a topic around video podcasting, and people were asking, oh, I want to do video podcast. Is that something that I should be doing? And you had mentioned that's something that you can implement, but it's not necessarily going to be the go-to, because again, it all depends on the conversation people are having.
Absolutely. And I've found that I was publishing my podcast in video format on YouTube because my primary platform is YouTube. Mm-hmm. And podcasting is obviously a long form thing. And I found that it actually, and I've heard this from other people, that it hurts it hurts you in the algorithm if you have a long format video that people only watch 2 or 3 minutes of. Mm-hmm. So I actually stopped publishing my podcast on YouTube and I just have it on audio now.
No, that was probably a few years ago, a few months ago. Like how long ago was that?
That I stopped publishing the video? Mm-hmm. It was probably 9 months ago.
Okay. Yeah. Because you probably heard this already, right? Google's deciding to shut down Google Podcasts and driving all their traffic over to YouTube Music. And I just heard recently that YouTube now has a RSS import feature, so you can bring your RSS feed directly into YouTube. And I was like, this is really interesting. Now, they're not focusing on the video aspect of the podcast. They're focusing on the music or the audio aspect because they want to bring all the traffic that they were sending to Google Podcasts over to YouTube Music. So it's still going to be audio only, but now it's like part of your channel. I was like, this is really interesting because I have a separate channel just for the podcast. I was like, this is interesting now that I can bring my podcast to my main channel.
So you have two YouTube channels.
Yeah. So I have my main channel where I talk about technology and whatnot. And then I have the channel specific to Hacks and Hobbies where all the episodes on Hacks and Hobbies were on that channel.
Got it. I learned something new. So now I have to figure out how to import my RSS feed to YouTube. That'll be great though.
That will be really great. Yeah. So Philip, let's go back to the beginning or take a walk down memory lane. How'd you get started? I know you mentioned in the green room that you've been in the creative space for the past 30 years. Yeah. And like, what inspired you to say, hey, I want to go down this route as opposed to something else altogether?
I come from a very creative family. So my brother and sister at the beginning of their careers were both SAG and Equity actors. My dad is a journalist. And then I also was a musician from very early age, as well as my brother. So it came from a very creative family. I ended up going to boarding school, which was a family tradition thing to do, which was like coat and tie, Northeast
uniform, right?
Uniform thing.
Nice.
Yeah. And that was grooming everybody to go to Harvard and Yale and Princeton and become a banker. And that was definitely not my jam at that moment. I was a musician and an actor and an artist. And so I've always split my creative pursuits around those kind of three things. And then so when I went away after high school, I went to fine art school. So I actually have my master's degree in painting, of all things. And I started off my career as a teacher of painting. And then after I had like my second good teaching gig, I had a gig in the south of France with the Cleveland Art Institute. And I did a whole lot of monotypes there, printmaking. And I came back and moved to New York City and started to put all my monotypes on t-shirts and sell them at street fairs around New York City. And this was back in the early 90s. And then I did that for a while, essentially realized a lot of things about sales and inventory and the fashion industry that were very hard learned lessons. And I ended up going to work for one of my competitors, actually, and became a graphic designer in this $5 million a year t-shirt business in Brooklyn. And that was where I learned about the Macintosh, and I started very quickly managing other designers and realized that being a creative leader was a lot like being a teacher, except you made more money and you weren't out of work every 9 months. So I stayed in the fashion industry for about 15 years, actually. I stayed in that company for a while, then to a licensing company, working with Warner Brothers and Disney and Paramount and all those licensed things. And then I moved over to Old Navy, and just as Old Navy was starting up, and it was owned by the Gap and Banana Republic. And it was, Old Navy was actually the most successful retail endeavor in history. They hit $5 billion in sales within the first, no, sorry, $1 billion in sales within the first 5 years.
Wow.
And so it was like this crazy rocket ship. And I went from being a senior designer there up, and I stayed about 11 years with them and left as a VP of design, overseeing packaging, product design, CAD textile design, color, and trend. And that's where I came up in the client side of the world as a creative executive and learned my chops. And then I made a jump over to the agency side and learned brand strategy and brand identity, working with an agency in San Francisco, working with a host of the Fortune 100, Chevron, Safeway, P&G, GE, Levi's, just doing tons of strategy and brand identity and stuff. So I learned the agency side there. And then I made another jump to another agency. And after a number of years, I was recruited away to go to PepsiCo. They were starting up design inside of PepsiCo. And I was brought on as the vice president of global snacks. Really great title. But basically, I was overseeing design for Lay's potato chips and Fritos and Doritos and Cheetos and all those very good for you foods that we consume.
Good for you.
But it was total fun. And then after a couple of years at PepsiCo, I burned out, to be honest with you, and decided to go off and do my own thing. That was about 7 years ago.
Dang, that's quite a journey for sure. It definitely shows that going after what you were passionate about took you to places that you probably had imagined, but when the fire hits the spark or the spark hits the right spot, you really get to fly up with the stars.
I love that analogy. I wish I could say, Junaid, that it was planned, but it wasn't.
I mean, planned.
No. And there's this great quote that was said to me by Paul Pressler, who was at the time the CEO of the Gap. We were redesigning the Banana Republic identity, which is still actually the identity that it is today.
Nice.
And he said, Phil, a great career is more like a web than a ladder. It's full of side jogs and it is not linear. And what you have to do is you have to make use of the things that get thrown in your way and make strategic decisions as you go along. And that's very much what happened to me. When I was a painting teacher, I never in a million years would have imagined that I was going to be overseeing 65 people at Old Navy in 10 years, but I was. And I would have never, and when I was at PepsiCo overseeing Global Snacks, I never would have imagined that I would have been a solo creative entrepreneur doing courses and mastermind communities and consulting with small and medium-sized businesses, yeah, or that I would have a YouTube channel or a podcast. I never imagined any of those things until I got there.
You're the type of person that I would say is living in the present. And I think what's happening with a lot of people is they're either stuck in the past, there's woe is me, this never happened to me, blah, blah, blah. Or they're comparing themselves to somebody who's achieved it and then they never came around to doing it themselves. But then I think living in the present, you're like, hey, what can I do now? And as a painter, you're not going to be like, oh, I wish I had these other colors. No, you just take the colors you have and you start painting. And then what becomes is the art being exuded from your own imagination and your expression. And I think that's what's attracting a lot of people around you over the years.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that as I've had opportunities in my life, I've made strategic choices as to what I've been doing that gave me a skill that I can bring to the table to the new thing. And then what could I learn in a new thing that would take me to the next place? And that's very much how I approached. I think the biggest watershed moment was when I went from working for the man for corporate and then going off on my own, because I had basically no concept of how to do it whatsoever. I'd never freelanced in my life. And I was also, I'd been operating at a very senior level for 2 decades, and I was walking into this world of email marketing and content marketing and newsletters, and it was just completely and utterly new to me. Yeah. And so I had to really step back and say, okay, I have to approach this in a very Zen way, very beginner's mind. I have to unlearn, take all the tools that I have from my previous history and have them in my pocket. But I have to really look at this in a very new way and be teachable. And that was very hard after 20-year career.
Yeah.
Big business card, big titles, people reporting to you, huge salaries. And then to go, oh, I don't know anything about a YouTube channel. I don't know anything about email marketing. I don't know anything about a podcast.
Yeah.
How do I learn this from scratch? And that's very humbling, super humbling. And but the more you can humble yourself, the more you can move forward. And I think mid-career people, that's the toughest thing. You're carrying with you a lot of personal expectations of yourself. And then when, in order to relearn or start from scratch is a very, is a tough thing. But the more you can make peace with that in yourself, the faster you can move.
That's so interesting, because I think somebody mentioned the dumber you are, the more successful you will become. Like, wait, how?
Yeah, I have this quote I like to say, which is dare to be stupid. And it's not really stupid, but it's more dare to be teachable.
Yeah,
you have to, and that's where I also, let me tell you this very quick analogy. Mm-hmm. Really quick analogy is like when you want to learn tennis, right? You want to be a great tennis player. Mm-hmm. You can watch a bunch of tennis videos. You can read a bunch of tennis books. You can buy a great racket. You can buy really cool tennis clothes, right?
Yes.
You can go to a bunch of tennis matches and watch the pros. But until you get out there on the court and you start hitting a ball into the net and over the backstop and all this stuff, you're not going to learn tennis.
Yeah.
And if you are starting anything new, especially something new like a podcast or a YouTube channel, where you are essentially learning in public, and you're being, you're, what keeps a lot of people from doing that is they feel like everyone's watching them and they're being judged. It's like you're learning tennis and you already have a crowd of 1,000 people around you. That's a painful experience. But the thing about it is that when people don't realize that when you start a podcast or a YouTube channel or an email newsletter or whatever, you don't have an audience.
Mm-hmm.
So no one's watching you. And you can get in there and learn it and fail and make a lot of stupid mistakes without kind of that those eyes on you. And that's one of those things that is, I think people don't realize or keeps a lot of people from trying it.
Yeah. I think one of the things they'll say, what would people say? People aren't watching, so they're not going to say anything. But then you're also right. If you spend a ton of time reading books and reading or watching videos and watching other people do, guess what's not happening? You're not doing, right? So I spent about 8 years thinking about beekeeping, right? It was in the back of my mind. I started stacking things, and it's one of my origin stories, right? But towards the last 6 months before I became a beekeeper or started to, I watched 6 months just videos of beekeeping. And the last one, the last video that I watched, the guy said, if you really want to be a beekeeper, you should go find a local beekeepers association. I was like, hey, I would. How about that? How about that? And the rest is history, because you join the beekeepers group. They're like, hey, we have this class going on. You can become a beekeeper in 8 weeks. I'm like, let's do it. So that was my little journey of actually doing, as opposed to just watching, oh, this is so cool, this is so cool, and just contemplating and analyzing and reanalyzing. And that's, I think, a lot of people are stuck in that mode because they're so used to consuming content. They're so used to, like, for social media, they're just scrolling up and up, oh, this cool video, and up and up, and up, oh, this cool video. But then when you actually create that kind of content, that's when you start the growth for yourself.
Yeah, there's this great quote, and I can't remember who said it. It was something I read on Medium that said, the only way to cut through the noise is to become the signal. And I just thought that was brilliant. And it's so true. And they say that about business. It's like the best time to start a business was 5 years ago, but the second best time is right now.
Right now.
And the same thing is with podcasts. People say podcasting is all saturated. YouTube's so saturated. It's possible to cut through. It's not true. When I started YouTube 7 years ago, there were already people with millions of subscribers and followers who were in my space, in my category. But you can't let that deter you, because you are bringing something of your own experience, your own story, your own history, your own personality. And people may want to learn or experience you. One of the things I always try to tell myself as I look at my competition, and I have competition in the branding and design space.
Sure.
People who are much more successful financially and in terms of followers than I am. But the thing is that people like to learn or like to hang out with different people for different reasons.
Yeah.
I have 280,000 subscribers on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And when I talk to them or communicate with them in the comments, they're like, I just like your vibe. I like how you teach. I like how you talk about things. You just don't, you cut through all the BS. You get to the topic quickly and you don't fill it with a lot of filler. People watch a 10-minute video of mine and they're like, I learned more in the last 10 minutes than I did in the whole last quarter of my marketing class. And that's what lights me on fire. And I think that, and people just, and they might like this other person or this other woman or their vibe better, how they describe things better. And so I never get worried about competition, because there's enough people and business out there for everybody. You just have to find the tribe that you resonate with, essentially.
And it's good to have competition, because that means there's a need for that thing. If you came up with the randomest thing and there's no competition, guess what's not happening? You're not selling any of it, because nobody has the need for this random device, right? There's actually a museum of failure here in DC that I just watched an ad for. There's at least hundreds of different failed items there. Like the shake weight is one of them. In there. Like, you remember the shake weight?
Yes.
Where you basically hold the weight and then it's shaking itself.
Yes.
And you're getting a workout. That's one of the failed inventions that's in this museum. It just goes to show, you want to be in the space where there's competition, because that means there is a need for that thing. There's so many different coffee shops side by side, but people go to the one that they're associated with, they built a connection with.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what's noting to again, show people that, hey, if there's competition, that means that you're in a good industry and that you can actually make it really big.
And then you have to figure out, what is your differentiation? That's in branding and marketing, differentiation is everything. It's
it is.
How are you better, different? How do you deliver it in a fairly unique way? Or what's your twist on it? That was one of the things I learned in the fashion industry, was that we're selling clothes, mm-hmm. pants, shirts, dresses, hats. And there are 10 absolute zillion ways that you can make a pair of pants or a shirt.
Yeah.
And there are how many successful fashion companies in the world, right? Dozens, hundreds. And they all do shirts, mm-hmm. but they do it in their own unique way, or yeah. they've developed a brand personality that people want to emulate. They want to yeah. adopt that lifestyle. It's like the Apple thing. You're either an mm-hmm. Apple person or you're a PC person, or
right,
an iPhone
exactly.
person, or you're an Android person.
Yeah.
There's this level of identification that people develop with brands. So you have to figure out, like, what is that personality of what you're bringing to the table, whether yeah. it's a business or whether you're an entrepreneur or a solopreneur.
Absolutely love that, man. This has been so fun and revealing conversation, because a brand is, it's simply who you are as a person. And then that your own, I think, your own things that make you unique are the ones that are then represented in the brand that you create.
If you are a solopreneur, or your mm-hmm. brand is basically built around you, it's not so difficult, because you're a human being. You have a personality, you have a look, sound, the way you talk, you have a brand voice, so to speak. If you're building a brand or a brand personality around a company where mm-hmm. you have dozens or hundreds of people in that company, it's a little bit more of a, I want to say intentional, not just manufactured in a way,
right? Right.
Exactly. But an intentional kind of creation that you have to put a lot of thought and strategy into, and a lot of research into how you're going to build that, because you can't leave it up to chance, essentially. And that's the biggest mistake that I see with people and companies, is that they leave the development of their brand and their voice and their identity and their design up to chance, and it evolves into something, sometimes into something that they didn't intend, because they weren't intentional about it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And it makes a lot of sense, because that entire company should have a culture, has a identity, and how closely the people in it resonate with that. Because the closer they resonate with that identity, the more successful that brand is going to be.
Absolutely. That in the auto industry a lot. People mm-hmm. identify with certain makes of cars.
Oh, yeah.
And because your car is such an extension of your personality. Mm-hmm. And like I said, in fashion, sometimes I even think so in food to an extent, yeah. like the food that you choose to consume, or the restaurants you choose to go to, or even vacation, where you choose to vacation. Are you a mountain person or are you a beach person?
Interesting. Right? Yeah. That's
and so all of those things go into your own personal brand ecosystem. It's
yeah.
like all of those things combined.
I love that so much. Are you a mountain person or are you a beach person? I think we've visited, I guess it depends on where you live. If you live in California and you have access to both beaches and mountains.
I know, right? Yeah. Yeah.
But if you're in Colorado, you're stuck to just going to the mountains.
Or you're flying to the beach, right?
Or you're flying to the beach. Plane. True that. Philip, let's take a quick break. And when we get back, I will share 3 hacks to take away that entrepreneurs, solopreneurs can implement in the branding perspective and start thinking in the right direction that is going to help them stand out from the crowd.
Are you ready to amplify your business? SBI Pro is your gateway to elevate your entrepreneurial journey, offering cutting-edge education, immersive training, and interactive collaborations. Whether you're just starting out or you're a seasoned pro, SBI Pro is the community for you, providing you access to professional networking and advice to accelerate your growth. To join, head on over to hacksandhobbies.com/SBI Pro. Join SBI Pro and transform your unique journey into a success story. Again, head on over to hacksandhobbies.com/SBI Pro.
Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. We've been talking with Philip Van Dusen, and we're just having a conversation as if we haven't even started a podcast episode. But the power of conversation is that when you find somebody or when you talk to somebody who's comes from a similar background than yourself, it's almost like we've known each other for forever, right? Philip's been, he's acted, he's played musical instruments, he's designed, and I've done all three of those things myself. So it's almost, hey, we lived parallel lives with him having a ton of brand strategies with clients like Safeway, Chevron, like these huge companies where I didn't really have that kind of parallel experience, but I have done similar work with smaller companies and feels, hey, we've known each other for a while. Because as an entrepreneur, as somebody who's trying to start something new, trying to unlearn or relearn something new, it's always very humbling, Philip mentioned earlier, to realize that, hey, you're going to go through this suck. And this is something that I mentioned. The first three letters in the word success is literally suck. So you have to go through the suck to get to the success.
Absolutely. And I think I remember in the previous conversation we had a couple minutes ago, yeah, I said this saying was like, dare to be stupid. And actually, I've always said, dare to suck. And I was going to write a book called Dare to Suck, but there's already like three books out there called Dare to Suck, which kind of sucks.
It sucks that there's three books on sucking. Well, Philip, I hear that you've got some really cool hacks for us. And then one hack that people can actually take with them and do this exercise. So let's just get into this.
Yeah, I'll end with that one. End with the free download tool that people can use. I would say the first hack is one that we've touched on in the previous conversation, and that is know your competition. This is whether you are a personal brand, whether you're a small, medium-sized business. I do a lot of work now after working with the big Fortune 100. Now in my own consultancy, I work with solopreneurs, entrepreneurs, startups, and small to medium-sized businesses because I've done the big company thing. And now I like working with smaller companies because you can see the work that you do come to life and affect the business a lot faster.
Amen.
And one of the things that I'm always amazed by when I do branding work is that I'll ask the client, okay, so who are your top three competitors? And a lot of times they're like, they are able to name maybe one. And I'll say, this is not good. You really have to understand that you are operating in an ocean, in a sea of other competitors, and you have to be very intentional about deciding where you are playing in that sea. And so one of the things I always do with my clients is I do a competitive audit where I look at their competition and really assess what their competition's doing, what are the products, the services, how are they talking about it, where are they showing up, how are they engaging on social media, what kind of content are they putting out there, what do they look like, what do they feel like, what do they sound like. And we map all of this out in detail and then look at the client's brand in relationship to those things. And it's always just an eye-opener for them. They're always really blown away by what they're seeing. And that always shocks me because I'm like, hey, this is your business. This is your category of business. You should know this. Like, I'm the new guy, right? And so I really feel like knowing your competition is one of those things that can really help you. And if it's not just like how to beat them, it's also how to be inspired by them. Because your competition may be doing things that you're not doing or doing it in a slightly different way that may make you look at what you're doing in a different way or come up with a different idea to dial some newness or some fun or some interest into it. And so that's another one of those reasons why I say look at your competition, because you can use them for inspiration and to drive you forward, not just look at it as a horse race.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's number one.
Love it. Know your competition.
All right. Number two is my wife has this t-shirt and it says, yoga hurts. That's what it says on her t-shirt. Yoga hurts. And yoga does hurt. Everyone thinks of yoga as like the spiritual, woo, holistic, kumbaya kind of activity. The thing is that yoga actually hurts when you do it, right? You're taking a pose, you're stretching your body, and you're pushing your muscles a little bit. And that's what yoga teachers always talk about. They always talk about, okay, take the pose and then stretch, but find some comfort in that. Find the peace in the stretching, in the pain. And that to me is very much the perfect analogy for learning and growth as a business is that you have to try things that are outside of your comfort zone.
Yeah.
I just posted on Threads today. I said, the comfort zone is where entrepreneurs go to die. And it's just so true. You have to understand that growth is pain and that growth is scary. And you have to work outside of your comfort zone in order to move forward. You have to push yourself to do something a little scary every day. And that's been like my mantra since I've been an independent. The first few years I was working, I was doing something super scary every day. I was posting a blog article, right? I never posted anything in my life. I posted a newsletter. I started my YouTube channel and started recording videos and putting them up on the internet where I thought that everyone I knew was going to see them and judge me. And that's super scary, especially when you have a certain idea of your identity and your level of accomplishment to go out and do something super public and very new to you, right? So growth is pain. Do something scary. That's number three.
Yeah.
That's number two. And number three is personal branding is one of my passions. And I believe that even people who are employed with agencies or companies need to develop a personal brand for themselves or consider it. Because actually, companies are preferring employees who have personal brands. So if you ever find yourself out of a job by no fault of your own, or you're switching jobs, if you've developed some sort of a personal brand presence, either through content or visibility on social media, and establish a level of visible expertise for yourself out there, you are going to be a more attractive possible employee than someone who hasn't. So I developed this tool called the personal brand wheel. Personal branding is complex, right? Because you have to decide on what your value is, your purpose, your mission. You have to decide on how and where you're going to show up, what you're going to look like, what's the value you're bringing to the table. It can be very complex. There's a lot of moving parts, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I developed this tool called the personal brand wheel, which is based on a coaching methodology tool called the life wheel. It's essentially a wheel that has 12 different pie pieces in it. Mm-hmm. And you have to rate yourself on from a scale of 1 to 5 on each of these pieces of the pie. And so what that does is it creates a visual for you that lets you know where you have, how strong and effective your personal brand ecosystem is right now. And then also maybe some places where you haven't even considered what you're doing.
Yeah.
And this tool is broken down into kind of 12 pieces. And just very quickly, there's four quadrants. One is foundation. The foundation quadrant is your story, your purpose, and the value that you're bringing to the table. The second quadrant is called omnipresence, and that's essentially where and how you're showing up. This is things like your brand design, so what you look like, your home base, your website, or any kind of social media platforms where you're showing up or what you're utilizing. Yeah. The third quadrant is called engagement. And engagement is, how are you distributing your content? What is the community that you're building, or who is your audience, and how are you engaging with them? And what is that conversation? So it's distribution, community, and engagement. And then the fourth quadrant is called transformation. And transformation is the one that people tend to forget about a lot, which is that you have to capture the transformations that you are creating in people. So you have to be intentional about tracking people's growth, what's happened for them, how your content or knowledge or ability or expertise has influenced their lives or their business, and then building a level of case studies or social proof around that. And the final piece of it is networking, and that is, how do you build a network that's beyond you? Who are your colleagues? Who do you interact with? Who do you get inspired by? And so this tool is called the Personal Brand Wheel, and you can get it by going to philipvandusen.com, and the link will be in the show notes, slash P PBW for personal brand wheel. So it's philipvandusen.com/PBW. You can download this PDF and it's got instructions on how to use it. It's got a series of questions that you go through that will help you fill it out. And it can be super helpful to simplify this complex beast of developing a personal brand and create a visual kind of, I'm a very visual guy as a designer. So by creating a visual sketch of where you're strong and where you need some help or work, it can be a really awesome tool.
Oh man, thank you so much. Those are some very epic hacks and tips that people can, folks and entrepreneurs listening, can implement in their lives right now, right away. Number one, know your competition so you know where they're going, and then you can figure out, okay, if they're going that way, I can either zig or I can zag or I can follow through, so because that's what's working. Number two, growth is pain. Do something scary, because once you find peace and pain, you're able to go further faster as opposed to just sitting where you are and not moving anywhere. And then thank you for sharing the personal brand wheel. That's definitely going to help myself and listeners on the episode on how to define their personal brand. Dude, this was lots of fun. Thank you so much.
It was fun.
All right, let's jump into the last segment of the podcast. Now, in this segment, I just have six questions and I've worded them funnily. And let's go. Exploring. So number one, we're going to be talking about hobbies and regrets. Exploring uncharted territories. Name a hobby you've always wanted to dive into, but haven't yet, and why?
Number one, thank you for sending me these questions beforehand. So I knew it was coming. And I'm glad you did, because when I looked at this question, I was like, wow, I've actually done almost everything that I've ever wanted to do hobby-wise. And I had to really think about it. I do music. I do art. I play guitar. I do scuba diving. I've done a lot of what I've wanted to do, sailing. Mm-hmm. And I thought, what I really wish that I had learned is I wish I'd learned how to fly. I wish I'd become a pilot.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons why I haven't done that is because A, it takes a tremendous amount of time, and B, it takes a lot of money.
Yes. So it's a combination.
It's a combination of those two things. But if there was one regret I would have, it was that I didn't become a pilot.
You know, and as you were talking about this, I was like, he's going to talk about becoming a pilot. Here's how I know. Because for the past 2 weeks, I've been talking to pilots, like literally. I set up a studio for a pilot who's learning to become a pilot. I met a gentleman who is a pilot, and he started the Smokehouse Pilots Club almost 6 years ago, which has about 5,000 members. And I went and visited his hangar in the local airport here and got to check out his plane. And he told me that there's a program for young kids from middle school and high school where they'll teach them how to fly for free.
Wow. That's like, cool.
Boom. Because apparently there's a shortage of pilots.
There is.
In the industry. So yeah. There's that program. And then yesterday in my mastermind, somebody mentioned that there's a APA or something. I'll include the link, but they're basically Association of Pilots in America that are also doing very similar things. So either if you're a pilot, you can join and teach others, or if you're a student in high school or whatnot, you can go and learn how to fly.
Yeah. Maybe I had a client last year who was their consulting business, who worked with pilots who are either going from military to private or regional to the big carriers. And so I learned a tremendous amount about the pilot aviation industry. Yeah. And there's this incredible need for pilots, in particular female pilots. This is something that I didn't know, is that the pilot industry is like 85% male. Wow. If you're a female and you want to learn and you want a career that you're going to be in high demand, think about flying.
That's the one. We were all hoping that AI would take over the flying business, because they do use autopilot a lot, but again, it's taking off and landing and tending to the aircraft. You need to know you need to know all of that know-how. All right, next up.
All right.
Rewinding time, what childhood dream job did you aspire to, and how does it contrast with your current career?
It is about as opposite as you can possibly get. But when I was a kid, I wanted to be Jacques Cousteau. I wanted to be an oceanographer. I wanted to spend my life on the Calypso, diving, pulling up cool antiquities from the ocean floor. And it was actually not until my, I always loved snorkeling and stuff like that, but it was not until my mid-30s that I actually got certified in diving. Nice. And now I've spent hundreds of hours underwater and am a avid recreational diver. And that is something that I always wanted to be, but professionally it had to turn into a hobby.
Yeah. But just a really good way, because you, if you're not going to enjoy something, or it's not going to, I'm not going to try to tackle that. I had a thought that escaped me.
That's all right.
All right. Next up. From screen to life, can you share a movie or TV show that entertains you and offers a lesson that resonates with your life or career journey?
Yeah, I thought a lot about this one too. And I have a lot of favorite movies that I've watched. I'm the kind of person who can watch a movie over and over and over again.
Yeah,
I've seen a lot of, one of the reasons I think I fell into that was I worked in a video rental store. So that dates me. And so I was able to watch movies 100 times. And there's certain movies that I've watched probably 50 or 75 times, but those aren't ones that I wanted to be my answer, because a lot of them are like Hunt for Red October, or they're war-based or some sort of drama. But I centered on Game of Thrones. It's a series that was a number of years ago, but I absolutely loved Game of Thrones. I thought it was great. I'm not a super fantasy guy, but I just love the level of history and storytelling in it. I just thought it was, and character development, the mystery, the kind of passion of it. I just thought it was an exceptional series. So if there was one where I would want to pattern my, it was epic.
Yeah.
I would love my life and my career to be epic.
I agree. Game of Thrones was, and still is, one of the most epic shows ever created. One thing that I always felt like it was so, I didn't start watching it when it started. I watched it like after a couple years had gone by. And so I had this really high expectations of watching the show. And then you would watch this episode. I'm like, okay, it's the expectation went down a little bit because you had such high expectations. So now I don't have any expectation when I'm watching something, because I know I want to have fun time enjoying it. I love it, man. That's definitely one to for the books. So following through, imagining yourself on the silver screen. Now you have acted, you don't have to really imagine, but if you could embody a character from any movie, who would it be, and how does this character's journey mirror or contrast with your own?
That was one of those secret questions, because you didn't tell me about that question. A character in a film. So I just have to say that I have this series of 10 questions that I ask people in my podcast at the very end too.
Sure.
And there's this one question that I ask people that there's always this massive long silence afterwards because it stumps everybody. Yes. And it is, what is the greatest song of all time? Or your greatest song of all time? Yeah. And that it blows everybody's mind. And so I actually started telling people that I was going to ask that one question of the 10, so people could prepare themselves. And this is one of those questions that I think keeping secret is tough, because I have no idea. I have no idea.
Who
I want to pick. I'm going to pass. I'm going to pass on it. Is that illegal?
We just won't know who you'll be.
I don't. Yeah.
What if you were Jack Cousteau?
Yeah, but he was in it. He was in a
he was
film,
in a movie. Okay.
So to speak.
He was an actual adventurer.
All right. I have it.
Okay.
I want to be Richard Dreyfuss in Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Nice.
That's what I want to be. I want to experience. My wife and I have been watching a lot of UFO series recently. Sure. And with the government coming out with like actual UFO footage now that they have said is real, this is like a real thing going on now. Mm-hmm. And I was like, if there was one thing that, and see, actually, Janae, this, it figures right into the flying thing,
yeah,
right? So
does.
I could experience UFO, I could go up in a UFO, and I could fly. So I can cover all those spaces at once.
Yeah, I like that so much. You know what's cool is, I don't know if you've paid attention to this, or I follow the Quran, the Bible. I'm a religious guy, right? And one thing that I know for a fact and for sure is that we as human beings are aliens on planet Earth.
Oh, you mean we came here from somewhere else?
We came here from somewhere else.
Oh, all right.
Because the story of Adam and Eve, they were born, or God made Adam, in heaven, which is not on planet Earth. And before we came on planet Earth, we see all these fossils of giant animals, which human beings didn't. Like, human beings weren't alive at the same time these giant animals were. So my theory is the reason the comet hit the planet Earth to stabilize it and to get it so that it could be ready for human life. I don't know. It's my theory. But
all right.
Something to think about.
There's the planetary asteroid extinction was only the last five major extinctions that have happened. Mm-hmm. Like, the planet has wiped itself clean of life,
yeah,
five different times. I just watched this series with Morgan Freeman narrating it called Life on Our Planet, which is a history of life on the planet from like when we were this burning asteroid to all through all of these extinctions.
The story of us with Morgan Freeman?
It's called
called The Story with Us of Us?
It's called The Life on Our Planet.
Okay, Life on Our Planet. Okay,
Morgan Freeman, yeah, he narrates it. It's on Netflix now.
Okay,
it's exceptional series. And we're going off on a way tangent. This is fine. All sorts of podcasts.
You're all good.
But when I lived in Cincinnati about, I don't know, 8 or 9 years ago for a year, and down on the river, there is a walkway, a pathway on the river at this kind of part of the city. They've developed the riverfront of the Ohio River, and there's this wonderful pathway. And they have this timeline of life on the planet in a linear mark on the pathway. And it's about 100 yards, 200 yards long, where you go through the pathway. And it's like this different period, the Triassic period, the, you know, Permian period, all these things.
Yeah.
And this walkway is about, let's say it's 150 yards long. Human life in that timeline is about the last inch and a half.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Yeah. Everything else is like hundreds of millions of years of dinosaurs, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I don't know why I went down that rabbit hole. But
no, that's really great. It kind of locks into what Life on Our Planet talks about, because, again, we haven't been around that long.
No.
We've exponentially went high and beyond of what's possible on planet Earth, and still we are the tiniest thing in this entire cosmos. That is, there's no comparison.
Yeah.
We think we know everything. On that note, last question.
Okay. Yeah.
Navigating through the world of superheroes, who's your favorite? And is there a particular trait that they possess that you wish to embody or believe you already do in your professional life?
Wow. That was color to that question than what you sent me. But I thought about this a lot too. I'm an older dude. I'm gray. I was around when the original Batman television show was on.
Mm.
And while that was when there was only like four superheroes. There's like Batman, there was Superman, the Flash. But I would say that I would want to be Batman. Mm. And the reason being, he has a really cool car.
Yes.
He's rich, right? He has an alter ego that which is the same thing Superman has. I was almost going to say Superman because Superman came from another planet, which would have been cool. But so he's got a really great costume. It's black, and I love black.
Yeah.
Right. And he has lots of really killer gear. So whenever he turns around, he's got like the perfect gear for the situation. Mm-hmm. He's got like the bat, you know, the batarang, right? Exactly. And the tool belt and everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's why I'd want to be Batman. He's a crime fighter.
Yeah.
So he protects people.
I love it, man. Batman is definitely one that keeps, they're trying to keep reinvent Batman, but it's just really love to see in the movie world. They've had several different Batmans. Which one would you say is your favorite?
I wish I could say that I was like totally up to date on the movie series of Batman.
Sure.
I think the one that I liked the best was the Christian Bale one. Mm. I think I liked him a lot.
Yeah. He's
dark.
He's very dark, I think. And I think the other thing that I've noticed is between Batman and between Bruce Wayne, he was a really good Batman, but not as Bruce Wayne. I'm like, I don't know who this guy is. It's totally like a different person. But when he was Batman, it's okay. This is Batman.
Bruce Wayne needs some personal brand development, is what you're trying to say. Yes, his personal brand, passion, story, mission as Bruce Wayne is not well developed. He needs to take a look at the personal brand wheel.
I think he does, and evaluate himself. We need to do a personal brand evaluation of Bruce Wayne.
We should do that.
That would be so fun.
Totally, yes. Should judge him by the personal brand wheel.
And maybe we do personal brand wheels for different superheroes, and then becomes a totally different show.
Oh, that's funny. That's great. There's a show for you. That's the kind of niche show that could like totally take off.
Yes. Last and final question. What board game would you be if you were a board game?
I would be the Game of Life.
Game of Life. I love it.
Because it's a path. It's a pathway.
It is a
pathway.
And
there's all sorts of surprise things that happen along the way.
Amen. Man, thank you so much, Philip, for this opportunity to bring you onto the podcast. Had a ton of fun talking with you and learning about your origin story, going deep into personal branding, the three hacks, and then your pop culture, you know, reflection of who you are. I love the way that the podcast has evolved over time, that I go from the right brain to the left brain and then back to the right brain. And then we send the people off. Where can superpreneurs find you?
Best place to find me and everything that I'm up to is on my website, philipvandusen.com.
Beautiful. We'll be sure to include all the links in the show notes, especially the gift you have available for us. And till the next episode, catch you soon.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this episode on Hacks and Hobbies. We absolutely appreciate your contribution. You can find additional notes on hacksandhobbies.com. Please share the podcast with your friends and tell them what you learned about our guest today.